Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
How was your Halloween?
It was very exciting. We went as Stulu and the Revengers.
Excellent.
My catchphrase was Alka-Seltzer.
Alka-Seltzer.
Because Stanley goes, Excelsior!
Does he?
He does.
I didn't know that about Stanley. When does he say that?
All the time. It's like his own phrase. He invented the word.
That's really, because I do say Excelsior, and I've always wondered. No, why do I say it? I say it because Martin Prince says it in The Simpsons.
I'm 80% positive that it's a Stanley.
A Stanleyism.
Stanley Excelsior.
Welcome to Jim and Tomic's Musical Theater Happy Hour, your weekly podcast with ballads and booze.
Did you say booze?
Booze. We have Mr. Booze, the Frank Sinatra song from Robin and the Seven Hoods. Of course we say booze is an American word.
Is it?
I guess so.
Like booze hound?
I think it is American. My gut instinct tells me booze is American slang from Prohibition.
Okay, cool. Cool. And do you know what else I just realized?
What?
Booze.
But this is after Halloween. People are going to be listening to this.
Like, I know, but it's still the season.
It is the spoopy season.
It is. Do you know what's so weird? And I think we may have talked about this last year. I think we actually did. It's going to return. We're just going to have the same conversation in parallel. I still find it so weird you guys don't have Guy Fawkes night.
No. Yeah. It seems dangerous in American land to give people permission to like just recklessly burn things. Like that sounds like people, you know, Halloween is already dangerous enough in a bunch of parts of America.
Very true. Well, it's, you know, it's a treat for everyone.
It's true.
Should we put our costumes up again this year?
Probably.
I think that should be a new tradition.
It should be a new tradition. I will. Yeah. I don't want to spoil anyone's privacy, so mine's just going to be a lone Stanley all on his own with no Avengers around him.
And mine is a high concept piece, so I might just leave it open to people's interpretation. And we can discuss it in the comments.
And it'll be your guess. We won't tell you which is a picture of who, so you'll have to guess. Because our costumes are so good, it'll be hard to tell which one's Jimmy and which
really
one's Tommy.
It's really going to be difficult to tell. So there we go. We'll see. Thomas, what are you drinking today? This is my first time asking it.
Your first time asking. I have a classy, classy vintage 1920s Berlin champagne.
Delicious. Absolutely delicious.
What are you drinking today?
The exact same.
We ordered
a bottle.
I forgot we did. Right. We Amazon primed that 1920s champagne bottle.
Yeah, it was worth it.
Did a drone deliver yours? A drone delivered mine.
No, we don't have that yet in the UK. I just had a small boy come to my door and chat and say, "All right, sir. All right, mister."
You guys don't have Amazon, right? You just have to lean out the window and be like, "You there, boy, run down to the champagne store and buy me."
Yeah, we just got the Pony Express.
Got it.
And so it's been going really well, though. Yeah. So I think we'll probably just stick with it.
I mean, you don't have to deal with unions.
Oh, so true. Oh, my gosh. Anyway. So the topic of our podcast today is... the film that this musical that we're going to be talking about is based upon is the only Best Picture Oscar winner not to be nominated for any other Academy Awards.
Scandal.
That's a mind twister. That still confuses me.
I learned via Twitter that it wasn't even called the Best Picture then. It was called like Outstanding Film or something.
Oh, okay. How fascinating. Whatever. To be honest, everyone seemed to get this.
I was surprised. Good for y'all.
Yeah, exactly. Lots of engagement, guys. That's what we like to see.
The musical is The Grand Hotel.
Grand Hotel.
So, Grand Hotel. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, mm-hmm. I barely knew it.
Yeah, this is a new one for you.
Yeah. And it's weird how we come across these every now and then, these shows that don't seem to have paddled across really to the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that we did have a production over here a wee while back.
Yeah.
Didn't do very well.
And I think the original Broadway ended up there, just a recreation, but only played for a couple months in comparison to like the multi-year Broadway production. It was like it broke 1,000 again, mm-hmm. and hadn't broke the like a musical hadn't broken 1,000 I think since Fiddler.
Since Big River.
Big River.
Good old Big River.
Good old Big River. You know, nominated for 12 Tonys, won 5. But yeah, not popular in the UK. Go figure.
Yeah, exactly. And it's weird because I think nowadays I'm very aware of that happening a lot because, you know, of the internet.
Yeah.
But I wonder, kind of back in the day, you know, if people over here just didn't really hear about it that much because... I don't think Broadway was hugely talked about.
No, and there's no, you know, we don't have, Tumblr didn't exist, so how did people get their news?
Exactly, I don't know. I genuinely don't know. Again, just living in that blissful ignorance. We were happy with our Phantom. We were sitting pretty.
You poor people.
Exactly.
So, Grand Hotel, as we hinted at our, in our code question, is based on a movie of the same name.
Mm-hmm.
1932 film starring Greta Garbo, John Barrymore, Joan Crawford.
Yeah.
Grand Hotel, if you haven't heard of it, is one of the defining pieces of black and white American cinema.
Absolutely.
I had never seen it, but in just looking at some clips of it online, there are things I recognized from it.
Yeah.
There are like cinematic techniques that it pioneered. It was one of the first films to use like 360 degree sets exclusively, like full rooms, not just three-quarter round pulled off the stage, fourth wall removed sets.
Yeah, little studios. Yeah. It has the famous line, I want to be alone. I was a really big Greta Garbo fan when I was younger.
Really?
When I say younger, I'm talking like 7. Right? I saw... Right, exactly. So, like, it must have been, like, Christmas or one of the holidays, and Camille was on.
Uh-huh.
I was just so taken with her. I mean, I was doomed from the start. But
that's true.
I was just like, who is this amazing? And just the way that the light, you know that, like, proper 1930s trope?
Yeah.
The light just sitting here on your eyes.
Yeah, just across the eyes.
For the viewers at home, closed captioning, just touching my cheeks with my hands.
Where, like, the mouth is in shadow and, like...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that, just that image is seared onto my mind of just seeing Greta Garbo like that. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so yeah, I saw her eventually.
And then, almost, you know, not quite a century later, they turned it into a musical.
Exactly. I think it tried to be another musical before that in the 50s.
Yeah.
So it was the team behind Kismet, everyone's favorite, I don't know, kind of Arabian fantasy musical.
It is not my favorite Arabian fantasy musical, thank you very much.
Sorry, I've put words in your mouth. But so that was one of the late 50s, and it was the writers of that, I think, got approached to make a musical, or decided to make a musical about Grand Hotel. But what they decided to do was change everything.
Yeah.
So changed all the characters and the setting. It was in Rome for some reason. And obviously it didn't work. Nope. So then it was, about 30 years later, something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
And then... Yeah, Maury Yeston came on board.
Maury Yeston came on board. Another Yeston and Tommy Toon collaboration after Nine.
Yeah, this was after Nine, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Post-Nine.
And it's a crazy progression for the whole... So it started as a novel in the 1920s and then was turned into a Broadway play shortly thereafter. And then the play is what was turned into the Greta Garbo movie. Mm-hmm. And then the movie was turned into... the musical, and then the musical was turned into the musical again.
Yeah. And do you know what? I think it is interesting. Despite what happened with the At the Grand in the 50s, it's funny how it's always stayed the same story.
Yeah.
I mean, very rarely do things change.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. Because, I mean, if you think from when was the book written?
1929. Right.
So if you think from 1929 to, what,
1989? 1989,
yeah. That's a long time, right? That's 60 old years.
And especially, so we haven't actually talked about the plot yet.
That's true.
And it is complicated to describe all the portions of this plot.
There's so much. It's just the juiciest little
It's a bunch of people crossing paths in a hotel, which is a trope we kind of hand wave nowadays, like people meeting in an airport, people meeting in a hotel.
Yeah, on a train platform, in an elevator.
People exploring racism in America and crashing into each other and crash. This is a trope that's been compounded upon, but Grand Hotel, the film, was the first to kind of pioneer this. And so the musical tells the story of a baron and an accountant who's dying and an old ballerina and a movie star and on and on and on, and how their lives intersect and don't. And so that's why it's crazy that the plot has stayed roughly the same over the years, because the only thing that really needs to hold it together is that it all takes place at a fabulous hotel in Berlin.
Yeah, exactly. But I guess that what is really good about it are the stories. I think they're original enough that they aren't cliched. Mm-hmm. So you're not, you know, it's not like, you know, you've got this ballerina who's wanting to do her final swan song. The ballerina is actually fading and she's scared. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? You've got this kind of ingenue film star who really wants to do it, but doesn't have the same kind of punchy drive as someone like Millie Dillman or something, you know what I mean, something like that. I think that it just has these nice little unique twists, which give it that extra edge.
Yeah.
But to me, I think the thing that overall that makes it so strong is its setting.
Yes.
So let's talk about that.
Absolutely.
So it's set in Jimmy's favorite time period of the entire world, 1920s, Weimar Germany.
How many Weimar Germany shows have we done so far?
Not enough. Not enough. So this was, if those of you who don't know, Weimar Germany was basically Germany on the cusp of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Post-war, post the Great War, pre-World War II, and it was in this kind of mad people wanting luxury and grandeur and spending far too much that they just can't afford.
Yeah.
And people were just becoming very desperate. It was a very desperate time.
Yeah. Yeah. Like unparalleled. What was the word I was going to use? Never mind.
Unparalleled. Never mind. And it's a fascinating point in history because it really is. It happened to the whole nation. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just a few select people. It wasn't a class group. It was everyone that it affected. And I think that's the thing, is all the characters in this show are being affected by it.
Yes, and we're seeing how they cope with these sort of things, and not just changing Berlin, but kind of the changing world. Like this, World War II certainly came of this and revamped the entire world. But this kind of post-war economy boom affected everywhere. And the hotspot of it was Berlin in the 20s.
Exactly. So we see right at the start, we know exactly when it's happening, because the first person to speak is... Is he a war hero, a war doctor?
He was injured during the war and is now a doctor.
He's now a doctor, right? Okay.
I guess I don't know specifically if he was a war doctor, but he he has a very cynical, negative outlook on the world.
Exactly, he ain't the happiest man.
Doctor Otternschlag.
Yeah, exactly. This is going to be such a great time to hear Tommy try and pronounce all of the names, okay? But yeah, so Dr. Otternschlag, he was affected hugely in World War One, severely injured, he's now a morphine addict. So you're already seeing, like, the fallout from that horrible time, and you're thrown right into that time period. And then as the doors start spinning and everyone comes in, you start to get a bit more contemporary from that. But what's his famous line? He's like, Nothing ever happens.
It's like people come, people go, every day is the same. It's something like that. It's straight out of the movie.
Yeah.
Great Grand Hotel Berlin, always the same. People come, people go, one life ends while another begins. And on Amazing. And on and on and on. I'll stay one more day.
Yes, that's it. That's the bit. That's the bit I was thinking.
Dangerous game and a carefree existence. Only for those with the courage to play and the money to pay.
Go through the characters. Is that a
it's a long list.
Yes.
So the doctor, who is kind of our narrator, throughout the thing, what's a good order to do this in?
I know exactly. I was gonna say the order they appear, but I don't know that.
Yeah.
So let's go. Should we go from the order of Wikipedia?
I think the Wikipedia article is relatively in the order they appear. So first we meet the doctor.
Yep.
Then there's the Countess and the Gigolo, who are our visual metaphor for the Grand Hotel.
Exactly. I know. They're your, if you're in a musical theater amateur group, they are your specialist dancers, everyone. And I think the people in the original cast were...
Yeah, they choreographed.
They choreographed it, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's a beautiful, it is a very beautiful dance. The whole metaphor is like, what? Are two, it's like there's like a dialogue scene about it, and it's like two of life's creatures who meet once again, something 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 something, two sworn enemies, hold on,
two households both alike in dignity, in fair Verona where we lay our scene, through ancient grudge break to new mutiny.
And love and death
make civil hands unclean. You just beautiful. Interrupted my monologue. Excuse me.
A monologue is defined as a speech by a character in a play.
Actually, I think that was technically a soliloquy.
They are our visual metaphor. They are love and death. They are, you know, the tango we all go through, and that we're seeing everyone in this musical go through. It's very high art.
And then we've got Rona. Who's a bitch?
Yeah.
She's a bloody bitch. We don't like her.
We don't like Rona.
So she's the hotel manager.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just very unpleasant.
Yep. Generally.
Yeah. That's what we'll say about her. and she ruins, next person on the list, Eric's life. Mm, well, kind of.
Kind of.
Eric tell us about Eric.
Tom. Eric is eagerly awaiting news from his wife, who is either in labor or about to be in labor.
Yep.
And it's very, it becomes a very grand metaphor near the end.
Yeah. To be honest, I think he's got the best scenes in the show.
Yeah? I don't know. I would give that to Otto. Otto, I have a very soft spot in my heart for Otto Kringerlein.
Kringerline. We're jumping.
We'll get Tommy. We'll get to him.
We'll get to him.
Because there's some chorus. So the whole chorus of this show is made up of the bellboys and the maids and the telephone operators. And have you seen some clips of this show? I love what Tommy Toon does with the chorus in this show.
They're swinging.
They're always swinging. They're always dancing behind something.
Exactly.
Like action is happening and people are dancing behind, which is so different. Yeah. Like this is, it break you. I bitch about it all the time, but when you're 3/4 of the way through a dance break and you're like, how did we get here?
Yeah.
Tommy Toon fixes that by having the dance break happen behind the action while it's happening.
Exactly. It's something I really, really love. And I love to put into my shows is like just events happening. Do you know what I mean? On the stage, it's like dressing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? As long as it fits into your context, it just creates a beautiful picture.
Exactly.
And that is exactly what they're there for. And you always get, that's the thing about the shows, there's always a sense of movement. Everything
is happening. Yeah. The revolving door is always spinning.
Always spinning.
Yeah.
We've got the two Jimmys.
Two Jimmys.
Which we'll get to in a minute.
Yeah.
We have, the chauffeur, who is a relatively small part, but he's your classic 1920s trope of a gangster in disguise.
This is, I do like in the notes where you wrote the setting for this is a dark, drowsy chaperone.
Dark, drowsy chaperone.
Especially with the chauffeur, exactly. A gangster posing as a chauffeur. You know, two gangsters posing as pastry chefs.
Exactly.
Filled with words.
I'm a chauffeur. Yeah, exactly. Then Zinowitz.
And then we reach all of these characters that I don't think are actually in this show.
So, yeah, let's jump over. Apparently, there's a lavatory attendant.
Yeah, no,
he certainly
know.
Doesn't have any solo lines.
We'll get to this too, but this is one of the reasons this is a fabulously difficult high school production.
Yeah, goddamn.
But so who's important next?
Next we have
probably
Pricing.
Oh yeah.
How would you have said that?
I would probably say Pricing.
Okay.
I probably wouldn't fall into Pricing.
Even. Would you have put a beautiful rhotic R on it though, Tommy? Pricing.
Probably. I don't think my mouth makes that noise.
I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, but who cares? So he's apparently a solid burger, according to Wikipedia, and I don't know what that means. But yeah, basically, he's like the businessman.
Yes.
That's his kind of title.
Yes.
And he is successful? Or is he desperate as well?
Everyone's desperate at some point.
Everyone's desperate, yeah.
Don't worry, I'm sure someone will correct us on the Reddit.
I hope they do. then we've got one of the actual main characters.
Yes.
Tommy, what's her name?
Fleischman.
Not Fleischman. Nope.
How is this?
Which would mean Fleischman would mean meat man in German. So Flemmchen.
Flemmchen?
Flemmchen. Yeah. That, so like.
Yeah, it sounds Flemmchen. Flemmchen sounds like if you hawk up some phlegm, but it's tiny and cute.
Or it like yes, sits on your chin. You've got Flemmchen. yes, sorry if you're called Flemmchen. I don't know if that's a name. First time I've heard it. Anyway, so yeah, Flemmchen. So she is our Millie Dillmon.
Yes.
She is our... she's described the pretty young typist with theatrical ambitions. Well, we can all relate to that, can't we?
Played by the fabulous Jane Krakowski.
Exactly.
Early on in her career, too.
Yeah, well, this is now Tony-winning Jane Krakowski.
Yes.
Well done, Jane. And yeah, it's a great character. She gets really good dance breaks,
really good dance breaks, really good songs,
and good fun.
Yes,
good fun. And she's kind of the romantic,
kinda. Kind? It's so yeah. She gets the guy in the end,
kind of. Yeah,
yeah.
She gets a couple of guys.
She gets a couple of guys.
But she's not like that, okay? She's fucking wholesome.
She does get a happily ever after. She's one of the characters who gets at least moderately uplifting happily ever after.
Yes, exactly. Then we've got Tommy's fave.
Otto Kringerlein.
Kringerlein, yeah.
Kringerlein. Played by the fabulous man you absolutely should know, Michael Jeter.
Michael Jeter. He won the Tony, yeah?
He won the Tony.
Yeah.
His Tony speech is in the show notes right now, and you should watch
it's already there.
Because
we've not even typed them, and it's there.
It is so touching. And I have a whole section on Michael Jeter later, so I will save it.
Okay. Oh, I can't wait. This is going to be lovely. They've got Baron Felix von Geigen.
I would say he's one of the other protagonists.
Yeah, definitely. And he has a lovely arc,
yes,
doesn't he?
Yes.
Lovely arc. Starts off, you think he's a bit shifty.
Yeah.
But ends up redeeming himself. And also, you know, some bad things might happen to him.
He gets shot.
He does. I wasn't going to spoil him, but... spoil him. And apparently he's young, athletic, charming, optimistic... and broke.
Dun, dun, dun.
Aren't we all? Can't we all relate to that? And then we've got Raffaella.
Yeah, one of the most famous of the Ninja Turtles.
Yes, amazing. yeah, yeah, it took me so long because I always thought because you know she's a dresser.
Yes,
and you know the play The Dresser.
Yes.
So I just instantly now think of dressers as male.
Ah.
Right? So for so, and because Raphael, I was like, oh, okay, Raphael, uh-huh. a male dresser. Uh-huh. Right? And then played by Karen Akers, I was like, that's a funny boy's name.
Karen Akers. But dresser to the much more important character.
Yes.
You want me, all right. Elizaveta. I got that one right.
Yeah. Signed it out, break it up.
Grushinkaya.
I would say like 97.56% correct. You just missed an S. Grushinskaya.
Oh, I did miss that S.
You did. But that's, yeah, that was a great effort. Yes. Played by?
Played by, well, Lillian Montevecchi, it doesn't matter, because...
Montevecchi,
because yeah, later in the run, played by the fabulous Sid Charisse.
Exactly. Much more importantly.
We should pause so I can show you this video.
Oh, excellent.
So this is... They aired this while it was on Broadway, and it has my favorite out-of-the-door interview I've ever seen.
Sid Charisse is fabulous, wonderful. I'd like to see the show 2 more times. I loved it so much.
Why? What could possibly
she
be that good?
She is fantastic. Her movements, her dancing, her voice, everything about her is terrific.
So you didn't like her very much.
I loved her. I'm going to see it 2 more.
When?
As soon as I could get tickets, my husband works in this area.
Okay.
My husband works in this area.
Right, that's ridiculous. I'm literally writing a character at the moment, and it's her. It's literally her. Oh, what a woman. And is she the only interview? She is.
Yep, the rest is just like footage Sid from the show. They're like, we got it. We got our clip. That's all we need.
That is it. Just have that as the commercial. You didn't need to show the show.
You know, screw the rest of the podcast. Let's just listen to that lady again.
Exactly. God, I wish my husband worked in this area. Jesus. Amazing. What a woman.
Yeah.
Well, you can enjoy that, team. Then more chorus.
Yeah. Didn't a bunch more chorus.
We didn't really say what Elisaveta was.
Oh, yes. The fading ballerina.
She is. Quite a tragic little character.
Yes.
Isn't she? Oh. And... Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's basically it.
Everyone else is like filler.
So, you ready? Here's the quiz. Get.
Yep, exactly. How do you pronounce?
No, but it is a tour de force ensemble cast.
Right, that's a lot of characters. I probably could name other musicals that have that many, but they all have a big part to play.
They all have a huge part. Each one of them goes through some kind of change and interacts with some of the others. And like, I think that's one of the cool, that's what makes this a mystery show in a lot of ways, is you're not guaranteed that everyone's going to interact with everyone. And so once it's put in your mind that these strangers in a hotel are going to start meeting each other, you start trying to connect it and figure it out, and you'll never know if you're right.
Exactly.
And that's one of the very exciting things about this show to me.
Definitely. And it doesn't do the obvious things.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? It doesn't play the obvious cards, which is great. It reminds me of, okay, niche reference time, guys. So you know Clue?
Yes.
In the UK, it's called Cluedo. Who knows why? So there's a game based on Cluedo.
The board game? There's a game,
the board game.
Based on the board game?
There's a computer game based on the board game.
Yes.
Yeah, not another game.
I was like, that's a weird string of adaptations. Yeah.
And it's basically like a point-and-click RPG.
Okay.
A point-and-click adventure about like using the characters, some supplementary characters. And it's the same kind of idea, like Dr. Black. Dr. Black has invited them out to his hotel or chateau or whatever at New Year. And then the cable car breaks and Dr. Black is found dead. And it's working out, you know, classic, who killed him? But it's that same vibe. You've got all of these characters coming together.
And you
got
to connect
in
them.
All their, like, individual personalities. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got a secret.
Yeah.
Like, it's such an exciting trope.
This show is like a murder mystery without the murder to start it all off in a lot of ways.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I want to be that girl in the mirror there. I want to be that girl with golden hair up on a silver screen most everywhere in the world. I want to go to Holly. I want to go, I want to go, I want to go, I want to go, I want to go. I have to go, I have to go, I have to go, I have to go, I have to go. I swear that girl in the mirror, that girl in the mirror is going to go to Hollywood. Hollywood, Hollywood, Hollywood. Hollywood.
Okay, so because of all of these 5 million characters, it ain't easy.
No,
it ain't an easy show.
It's an expensive show, casting-wise.
Yep.
Just because you need a bunch of people. Like, if you're going to, especially if you're going to do it on Broadway, you need a bunch of really good actors or actors with names or something.
Yeah.
And that's hard and expensive.
Yeah, very expensive. Very, very expensive. And because, as well, the set demands a certain aesthetic.
That's true. Although, I do very much enjoy a lot of the original Broadway's use of just like moving chairs.
Yeah, the chairs are great. There's lots of them.
Like there's a certain minimalism isn't the right word, but like a necessitism to it.
Right.
If minimalism is staging minimally and necessitism is staging just with the necessary pieces.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it moves around so much, and it's such a high speed. You couldn't do this naturalistically.
Yes.
You just couldn't.
You absolutely.
So no, it's done very, very well. But basically, I think the reason why it's just not that it's not really known here is because normally, you know, if a show from Broadway doesn't do very well, it lives on in Amdram.
Yes.
But I've never heard of an Amdram group doing this.
Nope.
And I can't see how they could.
No, it takes too many people. It works really well for like a booming high school theater department, maybe, where you have too many good people to cast, or a lot of mediocre people to cast.
Yeah.
And so you want to spread the mediocrity around.
Yeah.
But I've only ever heard of high school productions of this.
Mm-hmm. And I think high school would be fine. I think if you were wanting to do it at like semi-pro level, it'd be really tough because it's a tough show, not just by casting, but also just by the way that the show is structured. Do you know what I mean? You need it's because there's so much going on. You've got all of these characters that actually, if you read, are reasonably well developed.
Yeah.
That, you know what I mean? It's not just throwing a bunch of people in. You're like, who are all these people?
No, they all have backstories and problems and families and...
Yeah, and they've all got these great arcs that are laid out, but it's very, very detailed.
Yeah.
And you need to be a very, very confident, strong director, I think, to approach this. Because
absolutely.
It takes a lot of work. It was interesting, there was a production recently in London at the Southwark, and it kind of received like good to mixed reviews.
Okay.
And one of the main things that it kind of shook up was it focused quite a lot. Well, basically, it changed the ending.
Really?
Yeah. So instead of just ending with the happy gang, you know, well, some people being happy, some people not.
Right.
And the Colonel guy being like, you know, repeating his line.
Uh-huh.
They focused a lot more on what was about to happen in the world and show off the fact that Nazism was on the rise.
That the war is coming. So they have a much more cabaret bent about it.
Exactly, exactly. And I don't know how I feel about it. I think I kind of like it. Some people said it was just a bit too much.
Yeah.
And it kind of spoiled all the good that had come before.
Uh-huh.
And it was a bit detracting because it was obviously shoehorned in.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? That's not in the script.
It's not a show about the... You know, under
the rise of
exactly, yeah.
It's not. It's about that specific time,
right?
And whereas Cabaret as well has these numbers that are almost got these numbers that are much more able to be analyzed and a bit more abstract.
Yeah.
Whereas Grand Hotel, there's the songs are, you know exactly what's going
exactly.
on.
Exactly. And like, as much as these are very much shows of an era, Cabaret does seem very slightly set a couple years later, a little closer to World War II.
Yeah.
Which in some ways makes all the difference.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I think that's the thing is, I think it, as a director, thinking about the show, I'd be like excited because it would be such a challenge.
Uh-huh.
But I think I'd just land off intimidated and go do something a little bit easier.
Yeah, exactly.
So I wonder if that is one of the reasons.
And something
why.
Easier to sell. Like Grand Hotel. Oh, what's that? Oh, it's a story about a bunch of people in a hotel. Oh, can you be more specific with the plot? Well, let me pull up the Wikipedia article with 30 characters. Yeah,
exactly. Like, exactly. Do you have half an hour?
Yeah, you've already lost me. This is why they had that lady talking about Sid Charisse outside the theater.
Exactly, that's all you need.
Anyone else who tries to explain the plot, and it's going to be longer than your 30-second commercial.
Exactly. You just ask, who's in it?
Yeah.
Sid Charisse, I'm there. Let's go.
I'm going to see it at least two more times.
At least two more type, so specific. I love that. I think that's probably one of the reasons why it's not done that much more over here. Is it, I mean, you said Beyond High School, you never really hear
Beyond High School, I never really hear about it, and it's always you know, the you need a very specific kind of high school theater program to do Grand Hotel. Grand Hotel is not the kind of big reveal you do at the theater night at the end of the year where people are like, yeah, Grand Hotel, I've been waiting for years to play Otto von Kugelblatt. Like, it's not, you know, the Grand Hotel takes a lot of convincing of your kids. There's also love them to death. There's a lot of very pushing high school productions on YouTube that I have a soft spot in my heart for, and then turn off after 15 seconds. So I think it takes a very specific kind of theater department. It's also very light on some technical requirements, especially considering a lot of popular shows nowadays, like most pop, you know, it's not Little Shop of Horrors, you don't have to make a plant. It's not Beauty and the Beast, you don't need a beast costume. They're just people. They're in a place where people actually exist. Nothing is magic, nothing is fantastical. They do people things in a people place, and then they leave.
So there you go.
I think that makes it popular as a high school production in some specific scenarios.
Yeah, definitely. But hey, directors out there, do it in the UK. I want to see a production.
Yeah.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUPS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
Yeah.
Bonjour. Again, I love, it's love. Bonjour. Bonjour, amour. Il m'aime, je l'aime, et moi, je dis bonjour. I know he's young. So many things about him aren't sure. But to be sure, I know my heart. And in my heart, I sing bonjour à l'amour. This boy.
So should we talk a little bit about the music?
Absolutely.
So what I do find really interesting about the way that this show was developed, so obviously the writers, Mr. Wright and Mr. Forrest, were the ones that worked on Kismet. It's the guy who wrote the book as well, and together they made the music for At the Grand, which is the Roman version of Grand Hotel, which didn't work. And then once Tommy Toon got brought on board to direct, it was then he was like, well, I've just worked with Maury Yeston in Nine. Let's get him on. He'll make it really good. And so he brought his cards to the table. So what you've ended up getting is this, I would say, it's like chimeric musical. It's a chimera. Because do you know what that word means?
Nope. I'm typing it into Google right now.
So a chimera is a Greek mythological beast with the head of a lion, the body of a goat, and the tails of a snake.
Okay. Yeah.
And it basically just means mashed up together.
Yeah. Very. Yes.
For better or worse. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because there's sometimes you're like, it works.
There's sometimes you're like, it works. This is, I mean, there are good things to say about this musical. I think there are some good songs in this show, but there's this is not a show that sees a lot of love on cabaret nights. This is not a musical with songs that end up on performers' greatest hits albums. Like,
yeah,
while there are good songs in this show, they're not great songs.
Yeah. It's weird because I think a lot of them are actually quite good audition songs.
Yeah.
Because they're not poorly written in terms of what they are.
Right.
It's just, I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah. There's something funky about the music in this musical.
Yeah. And not funky in a jive way.
Right. Not funky in a funky town kind of way.
Exactly. And funky town is not in this musical.
Like, I Want to Go to Hollywood, I like. Take a Glass Together, I love.
Let's pause for a second and talk about Maybe My Baby Loves Me, which I've decided to call the bottoming song.
Yes, what do you mean by that?
Right, okay, I want you to, now knowing that that is what I heard, I want you to listen to it right now, and it won't take you long to understand what I'm talking about. So it turns out she didn't bottom today.
She didn't bottom today. She didn't bottom today. She didn't bottom today. She didn't bottom today.
Honestly, I was like, when I first listened to it, I was like, what are they saying? It took me, because that's the thing about it, obviously I'm not seeing the fact that, right, you know, these are Charleston men. Like, it was just, I was just hearing these words and I was like, what the hell?
So,
what are you talking about?
I noticed this in my listen through this time around. I love Take a Glass Together, which also has the two Jimmys singing underneath it. And their scatting is rubber dub. Rubber dub dubber 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 dub, which is much more specific than what I thought it was in my mind. In my mind, it's ba-ba-dop, ba-ba-da-ba-da-ba-dop, which is not a verb. It's not like rubber dub dubber rubber rubber dub. Me has, seem to me, has more meaning than ba-ba-dop, ba-ba-da-ba-da-ba-dop. Ba-ba-dop, yes, da-ba-dop, exactly, is just like fake singing words. Where rubber dub dubber dubber dub, like, are we taking a bath? And
exactly.
Not. It's and not. She didn't bottom today. She didn't bottom today. It's she didn't bottom today. She didn't.
She didn't bottom today. I must say though, fantastic.
It's a
like
beautiful.
I think
song.
Maybe My Baby Loves Me, and it, you know, you get those songs after your first listen to, you get the ones that stick out.
Yeah.
And you remember it and you go straight back to.
Yeah.
That was my first one.
Really?
Maybe because of the bottoming comment.
Maybe, probably.
You know, but I think just because it was just, I just liked the construction. I thought those characters pushed through the cast recording really well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for only appearing in two numbers, bravo, the Jimmys.
Yeah. Are you sure it's just not because they were named after you?
Yeah, I actually find that really jarring. I always do. Always do. And it's like, because you know, like, Jimmy's such a character name.
It is like, such a character name.
No one normal is ever called Jimmy.
No.
Apart from Jimmy Olsen. But like, it's always like a little boy. Or in Scotland, Jimmy's actually like the name you would say, like, to like, if you're talking about, oh, Jimmy down the street. Do you know what I mean?
It's that just, like our, old John Doe.
Yeah, exactly.
Tom, Dick,
and I just find it so jarring because nobody's actually called it.
Yeah.
I mean, some people are, but, anytime I hear it, I'm just like, oh, that's my name. Oh, it's so weird hearing it. So that's that one. But yeah, I don't know. I looking at this list of songs, like, what is that one?
I wonder. I think it would be if you're new to this musical, on your first listen through, don't do too much Wikipedia-ing. Let me tell you that some of the songs in this musical are written by Maury Yeston, and some of the songs in this musical are written by Wright and Forrest, and you can tell the difference, kind of.
I think you really can, particularly when it comes to use of the chorus.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think it would be an interesting exercise to sit down and guess who, you know, sort them into their columns.
Yeah. And see if you win. Yeah. And if you win, congrats. But yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't say the music is bad.
No, it's not a slight. It's just an interesting, an interesting tidbit.
Yeah, I think I think as well, it's like the way that music is used in this show. Mm-hmm. It's not stupidly done.
No.
I'm forming this idea as I talk, so it could go horribly wrong. But because there is such a tight narrative going on, mm-hmm, throughout the whole thing, to make it a musical, those songs really need to lend themselves to that narrative.
Yeah.
So actually what you find in each of the songs is a lot happens.
Yeah.
A lot happens in them.
Yeah.
And that can be quite hard to follow sometimes. So I don't know whether listening to it the first time, I was just like, whoa, because I was just getting caught up in the story and, mm-hmm, I couldn't actually hear.
Right, you're not listening to the words. That's really interesting because when you were halfway through the thought you were making, in my mind, I was thinking about how most of these thongs
seem
very self-reflective. And characters reciting their thoughts, which to me is a separate category from progressing the plot. But I do agree with you that a lot happens during these songs, and they often end in a place different than where they started.
They do. Because if you think of one, I'm just going to try and pick one out. What's the one where the Baron and the ballerina get together?
See
what you need. Love Can't Happen. One of them.
Is that Love?
I think
Can't
maybe
Happen?
Love Can't Happen. Let's go for that.
Okay.
Well, Buongiorno is the one that she wakes up in the morning. So maybe it's What You Need. Yeah. Anyway, that's one again. I would say is very self-reflective,
mm-hmm,
right? But you know what's happening. You know that they're going into a little tryst, and what's shaken.
Yeah.
And then Bonjour Amour, kind of the same way. It's more of like a nice love ballad between the two.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's their own thoughts. So I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah.
So maybe in our slating of the music, we're actually discovering this genius.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe that's it.
It is very, in the same way that people tell me Sunday in the Park needs a bunch of listens to get into. I do think Grand Hotel is worthy of a couple listens.
Uh-huh. And that's the thing. Like, I'm not in the same way that with Sunday, I wasn't compelled to go straight back and listen to it again.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I'd be more than happy to go for it again.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I think that's still a slight to it. Like, it's not, I'm not parroting that as like, look at this wonderful thing this musical did. It was confusing. But there's something is up with this musical.
Something, yeah. And this is why I would love to see it staged. I would absolutely love to see it staged, because I feel, obviously we're missing book.
Right.
But I want to know staging, I want to know interaction, because I think there are moments where you like see things in one room and there's stuff going on in another room. Mm-hmm. I want to know what those moments are.
It moves as quickly as a farce, just without the comedy. And you can, we did Rumors in high school, and let me tell you, my first read through alone of Rumors was one of the most difficult times I've ever had reading a play.
Yeah.
And Rumors is a relatively simple farce, but just like keeping characters straight and who thinks what and who is intersecting Absolutely. With why, and it's just a one room farce.
Or like noises off.
You know
what I mean,
keeping track of all the characters, it really helps when you can see them. It really helps when you can track, how they're interacting with each other.
Yeah.
This seems like a musical to see, like Shakespeare is a play to see.
Exactly. I think as well, one of the things that I do have not a slight issue with, but I think it would have made it easier, is use of theme.
Yes.
And that there doesn't seem to be any. There's lots of reprise.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Good work. But in terms of actual musical theme, do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Or anything close to that. There's none that I could pick out that's like, this instrument means this character, or this melody line means this thing. Like, yeah, those cheats that Sondheim gives you, that Lynn gives you. Like, there's, and I'm sure it's because, three different people wrote this musical.
And I think that's the thing, is like, if if you've got these songs that were already standing, you know, it's a bit shan to make Maury Yeston come in and just rewrite those songs. That isn't what he would have wanted to do. So he'd want to put his own stamp on it. So that instantly stops you from being able to to have that vibe. But I think that would make it musically a little bit easier to follow.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe. Perhaps. I am not an expert, so I couldn't say. But I don't know. I think that's it. Maybe more bottoming songs.
Yes,
more songs
definitely. I mean, that's the feedback you give to every musical, though, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I phoned Stephen Sondheim up after I saw Sweeney Todd. I was like, Stephen, you're a gay man. Where's the bottoming songs? Is what I said to him, I said. And then he was like, Jimmy.
He was like, Jimmy! You're right! I'm going back to my lobby right now!
And I think that's what the new musical is going to be about. I think.
Sweeney Todd, the demon twink of Fire Island.
I'm into it. I'm sold. What a great parody that would be. Like, oh my god. That is so good. Like, yeah.
Yeah, and like, he lures them in for sex and then murders them, and then
it's the 4th of July starring Andrew Keenan Boulder.
Yep.
And he is the demon twink of Fire Island.
And he's got some like gay fly lady friend who bakes him into pies.
Absolutely.
Which she serves at her brunch shop.
Oh, Christ.
We're going to get on
champagne
this.
Champagne brunch.
Copyright.
I think this is... Yeah, I'm sorry, but we're totally copyright. This is ours. This could work.
He needs a different name from Sweeney Todd. We'll leave that up to the commenters. It needs to sound like Sweeney Todd, but be gayer.
Teeny Bod.
Dead. I'm dying. I'm on the floor. That's it. Good night, everybody. Tip your waiters.
Stunning. Okay. I'm actually weirdly excited.
Teeny Bod, anyway. The demon twink of Fire Island.
I'm sorry, but if that isn't going to be appearing on Hollywood Boulevard, like, within the year, I will not have done my job properly.
Attend the tale of Teeny Bod.
Teeny Bod. Andrew Keenan Boulder is perfect casting as well. We can cast this later, okay?
The rest stays the same. His face was pale, his eye was odd.
Oh, right. No, I'm totally, I'm for this. Anyway.
So yeah, the music's weird.
Yep. Through
space, you keep a lady on her toes, mister. My steps are commonplace, but you make poetry out of prose, mister. So let there be rhythm, and let it be loud. The tune can be smooth or bouncy or blue. Just watch me dance. Who couldn't dance with you?
So next up on our list, before we get Tommy's monologue about Michael Jeter, is Forbidden Broadway.
We've never
talked about Forbidden Broadway.
Which is surprising. Well, you know, Forbidden Broadway doesn't talk about us, so...
Exactly. I'm looking at you, Christine Petty. I wish I was looking at Christine Petty.
Oh, God, man. I want to get drunk with Christine Petty.
Oh, that can be our aim, all right, for all right. New York.
I like it.
That is 100% our aim. Like, this is what your money is going towards, people, buying Christine Petty drinks.
That's true. And see, if you get drunk with Christine Petty, you just knock out all of everyone you'd actually like to get drunk with.
Right.
Because you close
your... Yeah, exactly. They're all there. Just bring a selection of wigs.
Exactly.
And
done.
You'll be fine. Austin. anyway. So, yeah, Forbidden Broadway. For those of you who don't know what Forbidden Broadway is, maybe one day we'll do an episode.
Maybe. Probably.
We probably will, because we're going to run out of musicals eventually. So it's an off-Broadway review.
Yeah, long-standing off-Broadway review.
So like it's been going a while.
Yeah, a couple decades.
And basically they just parody the songs that are on Broadway at the moment, or if there's any big names flying about, they'll parody them. And it's the songs are so smart.
They're so funny.
They're so great. I remember the first one I listened to, I was like, but this is standalone.
Yeah, they're so funny. You know what I mean? And they are like, if you are the person who listens to this podcast and are a musical theater nerd like us, it is filled with your humor. There exactly. are jokes they make that leave me rolling on the floor that I could never explain to anyone.
Absolutely. And it contains the best Patti LuPone impression I've ever heard. Do you agree? Would you agree?
I do agree. Do you know my favorite Forbidden Broadway video clip? Carol Channing went to go see Forbidden Broadway, and they catch her, much like our Grand Hotel lady friend, just outside the theater to get a soundbite. Like, what does Carol Channing think about Forbidden Broadway? And infamously, they always have a male drag queen be Carol Channing in Forbidden Broadway, which is hilarious to begin with. But so she comes out, and they're like, Carol, what'd you think of the show? And she goes, oh, well, he did Carol Channing better than I do Carol Channing. It's amazing.
And Tommy was that drag queen.
That was, and that drag queen was Tommy.
It was Tommy. What would be your drag name?
Tulita.
Tulita Pepsi?
I'm sad you know it. I can't pass it off as my own joke.
I'm sorry. Do you know a bigger Susan Blackwell fan than myself? Get out.
Dorothy Chandler Pavilion.
I've not heard that one. Is that another one of hers?
That's also from Title of Show. They're both in Title of Show.
Dorothy Chandler Pavilion is in Title of Show.
Is in Title
of
Show.
I remember that in the production I saw. Okay, maybe they cut that line out. I didn't understand it.
My boyfriend's drag name, will do drag
magic. I love the when. I love the use of when there. That was great.
Because we're from Chicago is... Oh, you might not know that. Do you know the Great Chicago Fire?
Sure.
All of Chicago burnt down in the 1900s?
Cool.
It was started by a cow. You don't know any of this?
Oh my god. No, it started by a cow?
Well, for those of you
who understand... great fires always start with the most stupid things? Great Fire of London was starting a bloody baker's.
A cow kicked over a lantern.
Oh my god, it's Into the Woods.
It is Into the Woods, basically.
Oh my god, the next one's going to be done by a witch. Oh my god.
Anyway, his drag name is Mrs. O'Queery. Because Mrs. O'Leary's cow kicked... it's really funny. And you don't understand because you don't live in America.
I'm laughing so hard. I am laughing so hard. Great. Anyway, so the reason we're talking about Forbidden Broadway obviously has parodied Grand Hotel in a segment which they've called Grim Hotel.
So I actually haven't heard this one of all
have
things.
Have you not? It's on volume 3. It's on the Carol Channing volume.
Really?
Yeah,
I must have. So there's a bunch of Forbidden Broadway that I listened to before I knew the musicals, and it just doesn't exist in my mind because I had nothing to pair it with.
Yeah, so this is a great for volume 3 is really good because it's got Miss Saigon on there, and we've got Phantom. Well, we've got Michael Crawford.
Okay,
Carol Channing's obviously there. Grand Hotel. There's lots of good fun to be had. but yeah, that's the thing is I don't like to listen to the songs of shows that I don't know yet.
Right, because they're not funny.
Exactly. You don't really get the jokes.
Yeah.
But one of the big things to parody in this is all the use of chairs. There's a lot of bloody chairs in this production. So yeah, go listen to Forbidden Broadway.
Any Forbidden Broadway, you'll find something. They're doing a whole show on Hamilton right now. I'm sure when the album comes out, it'll be great. Lynn's seen it twice.
Well, there you go, everyone.
It must be good.
Grim Hotel. Grim Hotel.
Grand Hotel.
Grim Hotel.
Grand Hotel. This is the Grim Hotel. What number are you calling? Oh, you want Dr. Von Shrapnel Limpleg. Would you mind calling back? He's in the lobby, shooting up.
Das gut.
Metal stairs, rigid chairs, sets with black girder showing, missing walls, dusky halls, somber lights faintly glowing, whores and thugs, morphine drugs, death with blood overflowing. sex and sin in bleak Berlin. You're in the Grim Hotel.
Okay, Tommy, we've come to that part of the podcast.
That point we reach every week where exactly. I talk about Michael Jeter.
Our Michael Jeter segment, so, which we call Jeter's Teeter. No, that could have been really funny. If I thought something, that would have been really funny.
I thought it was really funny.
Thanks, that's just, I'm a natural comedian. Okay, so Michael Jeter plays Otto.
Otto von Kringerluber?
Yeah, that's it. And tell us a little bit about Otto. What's going on with him?
Otto is terminally ill. He is a terminally ill bookkeeper and has decided he's done not living life. And so he's going to go out in style and decadence at the Grand Hotel, where he's blowing his money, all the rest of his life savings, on living extravagantly.
Exactly. And also, very important note, he is Jewish.
Yes.
Which we all know at that time
wasn't the best of things to be. So, but Michael Jeter, you've seen one of his first movie roles. Did you know that?
I think so. I do fully recognize it.
It's one of his first motion picture roles was in Hair, as featured on episode
And I now know exactly who he is.
16 17 18. He is the pretty white boy with painted toenails in White Boys Are So Pretty. That's one of Michael Jeter's first role, like ass bare, boom, done. Michael Jeter is one of those that guys you've seen in a bunch of movies. He's the bad guy in Air Bud, the clown. Have you seen Air Bud?
It's no, that is that the dog?
That's the dog that plays basketball.
Basketball, yep, okay. You can see why I haven't seen it.
He's been in, he's in Sister Act 2. He plays
one of
the monks with a mustache. He's in, I think it's the, is it the Bette Midler Gypsy as Mr. Goldstone?
Yes, it is. Oh my god, I forgot about that.
See,
one,
yeah. He's in one of my favorites, Mrs. Santa Claus, starring Angela Lansbury, a Jerry Herman great, as Arvo. You may remember him from the old Watch With Me, where I can't figure out his name throughout the whole thing. He's in Mouse Hunt. He's in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. He's in Patch Adams. He's in in the Green Mile. I didn't even mention that. He's Dell with the Creole accent. He's in Jurassic Park 3, like all over the place. And is just a lovable, kindly, wonderfully talented, forward-thinking actor. And side note, I learned most of this from a beautiful YouTube series that I'll put a link to, Michael Jeter's episode in the show notes, called No Small Parts. It's a series on all of the that guy or that girl from movies where you're like, that I recognize that person. Where do I recognize that person from? That's Michael Jeter. So Grand Hotel was in a lot of ways one of his bigger breaks. It's his first and only musical, Broadway musical. He was on stage in a play once, I believe, that Tommy Toon had worked on or directed or something, and Tommy brought him on for Grand Hotel, and critics and everyone else loved him. Absolutely adored him. And you will too if you watch his Tony performance in Take a Glass Together, which I think is one of the most stunning pieces of musical theater choreography this side of 1900s.
It's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating choreography.
He moves in ways I just can't physically comprehend. So the conceit of the song is the Baron has encouraged him to invest a bunch of money in stocks, and he made a bunch of money back, and so now he's like, Baron, let me drink to your health, and they're getting drunk together. And you just watch him progressively get drunk. And it's one. It's a great one. All of the maids and chorus and people are dancing with their backs to you behind them. Just to, for no reason other than to make the scene more interesting. And then the way he slowly gets drunk and falls across this bar and launches himself across the stage, like, you'd have no idea a man's body could move like that.
Yeah. It's physical acting.
Yeah.
Perfection masterclass.
Yeah. But yeah.
I didn't realize he was he's dead.
Yeah. 2003, he passed away. Yeah. It's said on a couple different counts. Michael Jeter was has been outwardly gay his whole life. Made no claims to hide it, but kind of also never made a big deal about it because he didn't want, Hollywood, you don't want to be pegged as a gay actor.
Exactly.
And was living HIV positive for quite a long time and passed away of nothing related to HIV. He had a sudden brain aneurysm, I think. Oh, no, epileptic seizure.
Epileptic seizure.
Just out of nowhere, unexpectedly. And the reports across the world were like, died of HIV-related complications. And it's just not true. It's very sad.
In 2003,
Getting
your act together.
But just a wonderfully great human being. Every interview you see with him, he's just so nice. There's a great, it's in no small parts. I think he's on some late night talk show. It's like Letterman or something.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about how his original intent was to go into medicine, I believe.
Wow.
And it wasn't working. He wasn't learning anything. I hope I have this story right. And he was like, his plan, acting wasn't working out. He wasn't getting any auditions. And so he was going to go to mortuary school and he was going to learn to be a mortician because he was done with dealing with people. He's like, you know what? I can be on my own, live alone. And then he got a call for a callback and was like, well, I guess I'll do this. And then his career took off.
Amazing. And he won a Tony.
Won a Tony.
That's no small feat.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad he won a Tony. It's one of those, like, you can totally tell, because in the Tony Awards performance, the way that they start it is the way that they start the show, so everyone comes in. And he gets by far the biggest cheer.
Oh, yeah.
Even with Jane Krakowski being there.
Yeah.
He still wins.
Yeah.
And you know, you always, every year, every season on Broadway, you have the lovable character.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he undoubtedly was that lovable character.
Just so lovable. And so, like, he plays this character very well. He is an amazingly versatile actor. If you look at the broad swath of things he's played, it's amazing how different every other role is.
Yeah. So props to you, Mr. Jeter.
Hear, hear. Big bushy mustache, friendly smile. Looked like an old man the moment he turned 23.
Yeah. As all the best people do.
We'll ask no why or whether. We'll spend each moment.
Yes, we will.
As it moves us. Come, come, my comrade.
Comrade.
Nip the nectar of the day.
Sweet nectar.
Sherry.
Campari.
Scotch whiskey.
Chartreuse.
A cognac. An absinthe frappe.
So that was the Grand Hotel, set in Germany.
Yes, with your why? If that's the worst German teacher I've ever had.
I know, France and Germany are really close together. So,
Do you want to know what we're doing next week?
Absolutely.
Well, lucky for you, I've got a quiz question prepared. During its preview, an unexpected technical malfunction forced Patti LuPone to double as cleaning lady. What musical?
Please head over to iTunes and drop us a little review about what you think about our words.
Please do. If you'd like to get in contact with us, Jimmy.
Hi, I'm on Twitter. My handle is at as in Hendrix, and it's the same on YouTube.
It's like I surprised you. I'm Tommy. I'm at Musical Mash on Twitter and Musical Theater Mash on YouTube, or our show Twitter is at Jim and Tomic.
Or you can go to our website, jimandtomic.com, which is a link to our Reddit discussion, where we like to talk.
We like
great
to talk.
Discussions again last time.
That's true.
We're doing
every
really
time
well on
you're
Reddit.
Sadly. All lovely people.
Yep.
Lovely, lovely people. And you should tell your lovely friends about our lovely show.
Yeah, only the lovely ones.
Only the lovely ones. Lovely, obviously. All they are is lovely.
Thanks, Tommy.
I'm losing it.
I think what we could do is just package this podcast and send it off to any sort of casting director, and we'd be working in a cinch.
We're going to be on SNL. They're going to be like, do you know what we need? We need someone who can do Carol Channing, Stephen Sondheim, and whoever plays that role in A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum.
Exactly. Well, honestly, when we're over in NYC, that Saturday night, just you wait.
Just you wait.
We won't be on SNL. bye. See you next week.
See you next week.
I've noticed that every time I do stuff, uh-huh. like small activities like that,
uh-huh.
I always sing.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.